She's the media maven with her finger on the pulse of the heartbeat of Chicago. If it's happening in the Windy City, she's got you covered. Now here's the lady that puts the fun in fundraising, Candid Candace Jordan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our almost New Year's Eve show. Anyway, we're going to celebrate early today. My co-host, my friend, my producer, John St. Augustine. Hey, John.
Good afternoon, young lady.
Good afternoon. So, you know, we were just talking before we got on the air about, you know, 2024, you know, coming into a new year. I mean, you have a tendency to reminisce about the past year and actually years past. And you were telling me about a pair of speakers that you have that you tell the story about.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved it.
So, you know, my studio, I spend so much time in here. It has to have a personality. It's not just my personality, but it's the things that people have given me or things that remind me of people that were, you know, close to me over the years. So it's everything from, you know, an autographed mitt that I got when I was 10 from Randy Hunley, whose book I end up writing, to this big poster on the wall to my right here signed by John Denver after I spoke at Windstar in Aspen, to my flight helmet from the Coast Guard. That and a ton more in here. So when I walk in, it's kind of like a museum. I should charge admission for people to see this. But I have this Grundig stereo, and it was in 1958 when my parents got married in early that year, in February of 58, they gave this to each other as a wedding gift. It cost $100. Oh. And it's this wonderful Grundig stereo. You open the front, you could put, you know, the records in there. It's got a shortwave radio on there. You could pick up Germany and France. God. It's just state-of-the-art German technology back then. So they had that in their house. And I think in the 70s at some point, they got out of this and they got into a Sears stereo and a Sears cabinet with Sears speakers and, you know, this huge cabinet. But they kept this, and then I eventually inherited it. And I probably could work with it to see if it would run, but now it's just a keepsake for me.
Oh,
but
sure.
I would sit, every time I walk in here, Candace, I see this radio here. I go back to being a kid on the northwest side of Chicago. Every Sunday morning, my dad would put on a stack of vinyl, and at the top of the list was Bobby Darin.
Oh, yes.
And I would sit there with knees crossed, just, you know, eating it up, let it emanate on me. And so that's why I think music has gotten me. Now, I have never really been a disc jockey. I did all talk radio. I did 1 year of radio in Washington called the Dow of Music. And it's more about behind the scenes and played some songs. But my hat's off to people who have earned a living as a, quote, crude digital disc jockey.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
That is tough. I know it. I mean, I'm telling you, you know, I think you and I are very much alike because we're both very sentimental and connected to things from our past. As a matter of fact, Chuck tells me that I own every single item that any loved one in my family ever touched.
Oh, so, wow. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah. It's cool, but it's also borderline hoarder.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I don't care. And, you know, yesterday there was last night there was a show on about the World's Fair. You know that movie Meet Me in St. Louis?
Oh, sure, sure.
And so I went to my little cupboard, and I have a little tin-covered autograph book that's engraved on the top, and it says St. Louis World's Fair 1904, and then it was my grandmother.
Oh, boy.
And so if the little sucker's 119 years old and still survived, I'm telling you, and she's got all these little sayings in there from her friends and from her kids and, you know, the sweetest little things. I mean, it was such a kinder, gentler time back then, and I treasure stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The oldest thing I have in here besides myself is a piece of iron ore that my son Andy gave me. Now, he lives in Upper Michigan. He works, at the time, he worked on the docks, the iron ore docks, where these 110-foot-long ships come in, and they unload iron ore, and it's a whole process that comes from the mine. But for the first couple of years ago, when he was working there, he was low man on the totem pole, and they have these huge arms that swing out off the dock 75 feet above the lake surface, and they have to go in and clean those out.
Oh.
And so he's tied in with a belt, but he's got to go in there with a hammer and literally knock stuff loose. Mm-hmm. And up underneath some of the armature, there are pieces of iron ore that were stuck there for over 100 years.
Oh.
And so he was able to knock one off, and they test this stuff. Oh. And the closest they can figure was probably around 1890, 1895, something like that. Oh. And he gave me this, it's like this giant paperweight, but it's so dense. It just, like, from the times, you know, it was a very different time in our country. And to hold something that old is very cool, as you know.
Oh, it is very cool. What a good memory of your son, you know, hammering that out for you and everything else. I love it. You know, I saw in the paper today a thing about talking about the past, and it's such a cool section. There's a new Titanic-inspired cookbook out. You know, the Titanic that went down.
Yeah,
I'm
thinking,
unsinkable.
Okay.
And the book was written by this Veronica Hinkey. And it's, you know, they found, I don't know how this thing lasted, but they found menus in down in the Titanic of that night that it went over. And so they've got, I mean, the book looks fabulous. It's made like an old-fashioned cookbook. And it's got things like cardigan malted milk balls and, you know, the Clover Club cocktails. I mean, things that I've never heard of. But it really, I mean, talk about a cool thing to write about and to have the information on. I mean, I just think that's so fascinating.
I wonder what they had for the last, whether they knew it or not, supper.
Yeah, they had, I read about that somewhere. I didn't think to get it, but I don't know. I don't know what they had, but it was, they had weird food, obviously, as you know, back then. I mean, oysters, you know, was not that that's weird, but it's on the menu. It was very popular. And they had something called rhubarb panakokin. Something that the crew members were served, and it's a stewed rhubarb and cute custard mix. Strange stuff. But anyway, what a cool idea for a cookbook. I mean, I think that would be awesome.
I'm guessing like the dessert was probably Iceberg Surprise. Sorry, I had to. I just had to do it.
Oh, you're ugly.
I'll probably get email on that.
You're going to get, that's not going to be pretty for you, but I'm glad I didn't say it.
But you thought it.
I didn't think it. I don't think things like that. Anyway, so, you know, I'm doing an article, and I'm going to include you in it. I know this kind of like notice and new to you, but I want to do a write-up on Chicago notables and what their New Year's resolutions are for 2024. And also their hopes for the future here in Chicago. So you think on that. And but I've gotten some really interesting answers from Ashley Weider, who's the artistic director for the Joffrey Ballet. He tells me, we're nutcrackering away here, which, you know, they're doing the nutcracker now. Mm-hmm. I love that. And so he says he wants to give more time to his family. And he wants to take care of the Joffrey Ballet and their exciting 2024 year ahead, both in Chicago and across the U.S. and beyond. So apparently they've got big plans for taking that all over the world. And he, of course, wants to find peace, tolerance, understanding across the world. Good luck with that. But anyway, so, and Maria Pappas, this one was cute. So Maria Pappas says she her hopes and resolutions are, she says that she hopes that no one I love dies, that Brandon Johnson gets his act together. And right now she's vacationing, and deservedly so, in Greece. And she says that the happy people in the mountains of Greece never come to know the evils of city living.
Wow.
So that was pretty,
she's so cool.
She's so cool. She's so thoughtful. She's such a deep thinker. I mean, God, it's just really good.
And you know, she's Nancy, quick.
She's really quick. Yeah, she got that back to me in about 2 seconds. So, also, Nan Giordano, who's the head of Giordano Dance Chicago. It's one of my favorite dance companies. And she says, in our splintered world of conflict and turmoil, focus on pushing harder to radiate energy, beauty, and unity into the world through dance. And Lord knows she and that company do that every single time they perform. And so she wants to celebrate each and every day as a gift. Her son recently got married to a fabulous girl, so she's got a lot to be thankful for. But I thought that was really sweet. And she hopes that the world finds balance and embraces all despite differences. Of course, that's true for everybody.
Yeah, well, almost everybody.
Well, yeah, except, and you know, Jamie Lurita, that fabulous celebrity chef that cooks for everybody. Mm-hmm. And he wants to practice putting himself in other people's shoes to become even more giving. He wants to mentor more children. And listen to this. I thought this was interesting. He wants to become more selfish and allow himself to love himself more.
Wow.
I thought that was interesting. That's something a lot of people
don't lofty
learn to do.
Goals, yeah.
Yeah, so those are some really good things. So look for that in a write-up coming soon. I'm working on that column. You'll send me your information, too.
I could give you the answer now.
Really? Well, give me your answer.
Listen, you're not going to like it.
Why?
Because I've not made a resolution my whole life. And you know where that comes from? I worked in the health club industry for years. And all we did was watch people say they're going to come in and make these massive changes, and 90% no. So yeah. I've pulled way back. I mean, I try to look at every day as like New Year's Day, like I'm still here.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how I see things. And my goals and expectations are so low, which means the stuff that happens for the most part is just like a gift.
Oh.
So a little bit different way of looking at things.
Yeah, tell me.
Well, it just, to me, it just, it's so obvious. In my opinion, I've had so many experiences that I, you know, near misses and things that have given me a perspective, right?
For
so
sure.
I don't,
from anybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't look out and say the world needs to do X, Y, and Z. I'm like, just give me the strength to get through the day, be hollow bones to help the people I can, and to remind people that their voice matters, and whatever platform that is, I'm in.
Oh, wow. That's good. Well, write that down and send it to
me. Totally forgot it already, but I will.
Okay. Well, you didn't, but you know, you do have a very unique perspective on things. And I really value that talking to you because, you make me look at things differently, and that's a really good thing. You have a, you know, and you, it, like you said, you have but had so many different experiences from anybody in the world that I know that you have a certainly a different perspective.
You know what I've learned most in all of that, CJ, is to not react but to respond. That there's a difference between all the headlines that are constantly begging our attention as if we have to weigh in on everything, and we don't. I don't know where we learned that. And that's a reactive thing, which gets people, you know, foaming at the mouth constantly over stuff they can't control.
You mean like me?
Pretty much. And then there's the, you know, to respond is to take and sit back and watch things develop. And there's this old Zen saying that says, can you stand in the river of life until the mud settles and you can see the clear answer? And I've always lived by that. Instead of everybody's kicking up mud all the time, we can't see anything. But when you settle, things usually work themselves out.
You are, that is the truest words ever told. And you know, I am the one kicking all the mud up all the time, and it's it's just horrifying. And I really dislike that about myself, and I've tried to change. And I don't know where it comes. I kind of do know where it comes from, because you know, when I was growing up in Southern Illinois, you know, as I talked to you before about, my stepfather was a really bad alcoholic.
Right.
And I mean, the police had been to our house. I mean, it was a mess. I used to study in the closet with a flashlight because this guy was rampaging around the house. And so, you know, I developed such an ambition to get out of town and to do something to make, first of all, to make my mother proud and to lift her up in the community. That's my number one goal, was that. And because of that, yeah, I started kicking up mud very early because I was frantic to make a change, you know? And I think that that habit that began so young is just kind of stuck with me. But, you know, hopefully the older I get, well, if I haven't learned now, I'm certainly not.
Well, you know, you take it in pieces, right? I mean, nobody learns anything overnight. I don't care. Just because you may, you know, by the way, tomorrow I biologically turn 65. Right?
Oh, tomorrow's the day,
Friday the 29th. And so, and there are still things I'm working on, but I will tell you the one thing that has always been the one, I was thinking about a little, taking stock of my stuff here a little bit. The one constant in my life for more than 50 years has been the discipline of working out, you know, to go into the gym. And I can't tell you how, I mean, I started when I was 14, and rare is it that I miss a day. I mean, I'll take 3 days a week, then next week, 2 days, but rare is it that I would miss time for any particular reason except for an injury or just like I need a week off. And the discipline of that and the whole idea of pushing against something heavier than myself and building strength off that has played out in my life in so many ways I can't even begin to tell you. So what I'm getting at is, you could literally walk in at your age or my age and never have done any training whatsoever and become stronger within 2 weeks.
Oh, I totally know that.
Right?
Yeah. We have a gym upstairs in our building, and it's like, I have no excuses for not being up there at least 3 times a day. And I used to go every single day to work out, and then all of a sudden I had this mystery injury in my knee. And I'm telling you, everything changed after that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it was tender. It was scary for me to work out and do any kind of lifts and stuff, but I'm definitely going to get back to it. And that's not a resolution. That's definitely something I'm going to do because I have to. I just have to.
Yeah, it becomes, at some point, especially when you get to where we're kind of been around a little while,
yeah,
you got to take care of the machine. That's the way
yeah,
it works.
But mental health too. I mean, you know, you and I are grinding away every day, and well, I am. I don't know what you're doing.
I'm grinding too.
Around with a cigar. And
oh yeah, I'm lounging. Well, that's a good idea.
But no, I'm working out here like a dog.
I know you are.
So I definitely do need to work out. But listen, something else happened yesterday that I'm excited about. I got contacted by the Chicago History Museum.
Oh, very cool. What's up?
They want to want me to give them my Playboy memorabilia, mainly my costume. Listen to this. This is so unusual. This is how fate things happen. One of the people in charge of the costumes and the collection saw the show where I was on the Antiques Roadshow with my Playboy costume and memorabilia getting it appraised. They saw the show. After they saw the show, they, you know, they have a kind of a budding Hugh Hefner collection at the museum. Mm-hmm. But the girl told the guy, the head of the museum, he contacted me yesterday, we're going to have lunch on Tuesday and discuss what the procedure is and all about.
Well, look at you.
Look at me in a museum. I'm going to sit out there every day with a little change thing on my belt.
Chink, 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 chink.
Exactly. So, but I thought that was pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, another thing, have you ever had a storage locker?
Oh, yes.
It's passing through the gates of hell when you go into a storage locker. And, you know, we avoid it at all costs, but we need one because once we sold our house, you know, we downsized, and so we had things I didn't want to get rid of. We didn't want to get rid of. So we went yesterday. This was so stupid. This is public storage. So the rates were climbing like crazy. And so Chuck called and said, you know, what can we do to make the rates lower? Well, you know, you'll have to move your locker, move out of your locker. And he says, you mean just move it out into another locker? I mean, I said, that's so stupid. I said, you know, why would that have to happen for the rates to be reduced? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we removed all the stuff, like three lockers down into a new locker. But I did discover some things in the storage locker that was really, really interesting. I knew I had them, but I didn't know where they were. I've got the most amazing Playboy posters. One is me for the Key Club sales. I was in all the clubs, the life-size posters. And this is not the life-size poster, but it's a big, huge poster of me in my costume with a little Key Club card and all this
stuff. Very cool.
And then I've got the Michelob Light posters from the campaign that I did for Playboy with four other playmates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just a wealth of stuff. There's like 6-8 posters in there, you know, backed by cardboard. And so it was a real find. I was happy that we had to go in there and clean that out.
That is so cool. You know, I had life storage stuff years ago, and, you know, it got to be ridiculous. Not just the cost. I'm thinking, I haven't looked at this stuff in 5 years.
I know.
You know, and you go in there and you open up, and it's like, you know, welcome to the haunted palace.
Yeah.
But, I kind of got out of that for a long time.
You got rid of all your stuff in the
Pretty much. I had two of them, actually. One was in Michigan, one was here in Illinois. And one day I called my son in Michigan, and we went, opened it up, and I sold stuff and gave stuff away and went to Goodwill, and I kept a few things. That was it.
Oh, well, that's part of you. I know people say that it's ridiculous to pay for stuff you never see, but, you know, I've got in there that I've had this old Hoosier cabinet from the 1900s that Mary Johnson, who raised me, it was her priceless possession in her home in East Carondelet, Illinois. And it's the one thing that I wanted to have because I remember it was such a favorite of hers that she rarely ever used it because she thought she wanted to just keep it pristine. And it's even got the original menus inside it.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, it's spectacular. So that's in there. And I can't get rid of that. You know, things like that I just can't let go of. So,
and you know, listen, I think it's all about what you have, not how much you have. And if you need a lot of stuff, they need a lot of stuff. For me, I just got to the point where it's like I've had so much sports memorabilia. I've given it away. I've donated. Now it's just down to a manageable level. Yeah. And everything I think about, like Chuck talks about, you know, somebody's touched it, I all have in one space now, pretty much for the most part. I got a couple boxes here. You know what I don't know what to do with is about 3,600 cassette tapes, both sides of my radio shows over the years. And there is some real gems in there, and some of the stuff's just like, who is this guy? So I don't know what to do with them. I could digitize them. Like, who's going to want to listen to this, right?
Well, you.
Well, I've already 100. Heard. Oh,
you'll
boy.
You'll be in a rocking chair. You'll be listening to your glory days, and, you know, that's what you...
Somebody get me my teeth so I could listen to the radio. But I always say, you know, I feel like after writing 3 books and then put my name on a bunch more and all these radio shows and talks I've done and TED Talks, you know, people will know I was here. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And I thought when I was a kid that to have your name on the spine of a book must be like the ultimate evidence of a life well lived, and however that book may come about. And so that's all intact. But I also know that my kids have to deal with all this stuff when I'm done with it. So I'm not sure what I'm doing with those cassettes yet. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, have you talked to them about whether or not they want any of your things or not?
Well, the will's already
done.
They
were afraid
to. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. No, get rid of this shit.
That's exactly right.
I know. Well, another, you know, we've talked to about Priscilla Presley so much on this show because, you know, I'm her biggest fan.
You are enamored with Miss Presley.
I'm enamored with her. And, you know, here's why, part of why I think I am. Because, you know, I never for an instant suspected her to be the person she is. I mean, you know, she's massively huge. She's an icon. She's married to the king of rock and roll. You know, God, her head has to be the size of an apartment building. And when you meet her, she's like an old shoe. I mean, she's absolutely one of the nicest people, and that's so great. Generous and giving. And so I had another opportunity to talk to her. She came back to Chicago not long ago. She was back out at the Teddy Kossoff Salon and Spa, and she was signing autographs and, you know, all taking photos and just so sweet. And so I had a chance to sit down with her again and talk to her about her new movie, which I was very curious about to see what her take on it was. So I think we've got a clip of that if we could listen. Anyway, so I'm so proud to be back with Priscilla Presley. Welcome her back to Chicago. I had the pleasure of talking to her the first time around, and now I'm here because a lot of has happened since the last time we talked to you. You have a movie out now. So, and it's getting wonderful reviews. Sadly, I have not had a chance to see it yet. I know, exactly. But tell me what your thoughts are on it and how you like it, and what do you like best about it, and just how's it going with that?
Well, you know, first of all, I love Sofia Coppola. I've always liked her work. I like her as a person. And she approached me, actually, she made a call to me about a year ago and said that she wanted to do a movie about me. And can she talk to me? And, of course, I was quite honored. I thought, well, I don't know what she's going to do, but I do like her work. Mm-hmm. So we met, and she said she wanted to do the movie on my book. So I said, okay. You know, my book was on the bestseller list for 8 weeks. So, I said, okay. I've only talked to her maybe twice or maybe three times during that time that she was filming. I was quite nervous. Of course, she is she's a movie maker, filmmaker, mm-hmm. and it's not really polite to call up all the time and how's it going? Do you need me to do that? I wanted to, but...
Yeah, right, exactly.
But with artists, it's very delicate things because it's their work. Mm-hmm. And she showed me the film when it was just about done completely, and I was actually quite surprised. She did it from my book, and it was done very, very well.
Yes. Well, I know she controls her films, and yes. I'm just wondering, were you able to give her any input, and if so, did she take your advice? Or?
Yeah, well, she... You know, I wrote my book and told my story, and she really followed it. The one I was really concerned about was the girl who was playing me. I met with her, and I, you know, liked her very much. I didn't know her work, so I was very nervous about that. And she asked me, is there anything... Can you help me with anything that, you know, with the film to help me? And I said, yes. I said, you can just be sensitive. Just be sensitive, please. And she did. She did a wonderful job. She cared for him very much. She showed her love for him. And it was, I couldn't ask for anyone to
That's
do it
fantastic.
Better.
And how did the guy portray Elvis?
Great. Yeah. Wonderful. He did such a great job. I had a little problem with him being so tall, because Elvis was 6 foot tall. He's 6 foot four.
Wow.
But a lot of the fans didn't know really how tall Elvis was. But he pulled it off beautiful. I mean, especially his speaking voice, you know, it was so much like Elvis.
Yeah.
But I think he did a good job too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I saw the Christmas at Graceland, and I missed not seeing you in it, but I thought it was so well done and beautiful. I mean, the place looked spectacular.
Yes.
How did you like it? Did you like
loved
it?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Unfortunately, I was working. I wasn't able to be on it.
Sure.
But it was, I think we'll probably do it again this coming year.
Oh, good.
So hopefully, yes.
Yeah. What was your favorite part of the movie? Did you have a favorite scene?
Oh my gosh, the favorite scene. Us on the bed playing.
Well, there's the right answer. A little bit of honesty from Mrs. Presley. I love it, yeah.
You know what it was? It was not so much that. It was just I liked my time with him alone. And when we were upstairs in our room, you know, that was our alone time. And sometimes we'd spend hours, you know, talking. He'd be reading to me. And it was art, watching television until 12, because it would go off at 12 o'clock back in the day. I don't know if you remember that, but that was it, sign-off time. And we would, you know, and then we would go to a movie, actually, right after dinner, which is 10 o'clock.
Yeah, what kind of movies did he like?
Every movie that came out.
He loved.
The projectionist would get the new films.
Yeah,
so Joe Esposito, who worked for Elvis, would always find out what movies the projectionist brought. He said, well, this is the latest. So we saw the first run at the theater.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And we would go after, we would have dinner. We'd finish dinner at 10:15 as soon as Johnny Carson did his monologue. Got our, you know, got our coats and out the door.
Are you still a night owl?
I am.
Good for you.
I am a night owl.
Good
yes.
for you.
Yeah. I, if I'm having fun, I just, doesn't matter what time. Doesn't
Diary.
Matter. Yeah.
The same.
Yeah.
So besides the weather here in Chicago, what do you like best?
The traffic.
There's a good
God.
Answer.
Oh my God. There's a lot of traffic here.
Yeah.
No, I think the people, I just really had the best time. My friend Jim has, you know, showed me around with my assistant and the best restaurants and a lot of people that I've met. And, yeah, I can't complain. I really like Chicago.
Well, Chicago sure loves you, Priscilla. And what's next on your agenda? What are you up to? You have plans for other things or other projects?
I've been asked to do another book, so I think I'm going to do that. And just life after. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. You're a beautiful woman. People just worship you. That you've been so gracious here. We're at Teddy Kossoff's salon. I know Jimmy Place brought you back. And you are one in a million, one of a kind. It's no wonder he loved you so much. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well,
she is something else, isn't she? And you know, that bit about her being a night owl is so true because after that night, they were going to go out to dinner, and they weren't going to go out to dinner until 9:30. And so I had to pass on it, but I would have loved to have gone. They went to La Scarola.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, obviously a fabulous spot. And but I love, look at how joyous this woman is. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, she has wonderful memories of him. I love the fact that her favorite times was on the bed.
Yeah, go
alone.
Figure.
Yeah, exactly. Go figure. Oh, my God. But she is something else. And I can't wait. I hope she comes back soon. I hope she's not sick of us yet.
You know, it's interesting to me to listen to her speak and thinking this is a woman who really through the hand of fate,
mm-hmm.
right, was plucked from not relative obscurity, obscurity.
Obscurity, obscurity.
Right? She becomes Mrs. Presley.
Yep.
And probably the most loved and then hated woman in the world because she mm-hmm. was with him. I don't know much about all
yep.
that, but there's all that piece. And all these years later, he's long gone. She continues with all this. She's writing books about it. And in some ways, she still carries his banner so well.
Oh, 100%. She absolutely does. And even though she was married, you know, I think once or twice after that. And, you know, but she sure is a great representative for the brand, for him, and keeping the spirit of Graceland alive. And, you know, she has permission to be buried there now, which there was some concern over that earlier. That
yeah, I remember hearing that.
Allowed.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. And I can't wait to read her book. And yeah, I've yet to see her film, and I'm dying to see it. So, you know, we'll have more to talk about then. But I really do admire her. I mean, you can tell that she's a wonderful human being. So there you go. I mean, I could go on and on, but.
Well, it's your show. Go ahead. I'll listen.
No, thank you.
40 hours later.
Let's talk about your birthday tomorrow.
Oh,
so what are you going to do? Tell me
listen,
what your plans are.
This is so low key. It's not even a key. It's a key. It's key of the key of low. So tomorrow, I'm under strict orders. I have to stop working by noon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll do that. And that's not a problem because I work much like you said. I mean, I'm up at 4 or 5 o'clock
yeah.
grinding and you know, it's just my day. And I just don't look at birthdays.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at a birthday since I was about 12. Maybe 14.
Oh.
Well, I mean, it was just different. You know, when I was a kid, you got your presents and right around that time, it's like, well, now you're a teenager, so you're on your own and that's it. And so celebrating birthdays has never been a thing for me.
Uh-huh.
So I absolutely love when you go, uh-huh. Like, shut up. Uh-huh. Get with the program. So, but tomorrow my highly significant other, Teresa, has set up one of our favorite relaxation outings is a float tank.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. Have you ever done that?
Never done it, but I've had friends that
oh,
just swear
yeah.
by
swear
it.
Swear by
Tell
it.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the one we're going to is out here where we live in the burbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's a ton of Epsom salts in about 18 to 24 inches of water. So
oh.
you're totally buoyant. You can't drown. You can't sink. And so you go into these tanks, total deprivation or not. You can have no sound, no light, just total blackness. You just feel like you're floating. In the ultimate womb, I would think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you could have lights on and music or whatever you want. And the water's, you know, like 98 degrees, so it's nice and warm. And I started doing this back in the 80s. And it's so good because it's no pressure on your body. They say it's like an equivalent of 3 nights sleep in about an hour. You don't even have to fall asleep. The effect on your body, because we're always pulled by gravity all the time, it's odd because now you just float with no gravity. So it's very cool and very relaxing and very rejuvenating. So we're doing that. And then she asked me where I wanted to go to dinner. Anywhere you can pick in Chicago to go to dinner, you got it.
Uh-oh. Let's hear it.
You're not going to effing believe this one.
Well, Burger King?
Well, close. I said to myself, where is it that I really like to go that I don't get too often enough and where I can always eat the kind of food that I want to eat and just be comfortable for a while and feel, you know, where do you want it without having to wait? We're going to Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel is one of my favorites.
Ah, well, there you go.
I can't believe it. The chicken and dumplings are to kill yourself.
Oh, sister,
over.
Is that right or what?
Oh, God. Every time Chuck and I ever took a road trip, we would pinpoint where the Cracker Barrel was
100%
located.
With you on that.
Oh, God.
So,
well, I'm not
Yeah.
Jealous.
So of all the places we go, and what I'm going to have is a double roast beef dinner with double green beans and double cheesy potatoes and then a little thing of ice cream.
Oh, God, that sounds absolutely idyllic. Well, you've got good taste, John. I've got to give you.
Thanks.
Good for you. Well, I'm really hungry for Cracker Barrel.
And, you know, unfortunately, that. They're mostly set up on the highway, so we got to drive a little bit to get to one.
Yeah.
It was either that or Hardee's, and Hardee's is too far.
No, forget Hardee's. Listen, so now you've got the Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
And you've got that incredible gift shop. You've got those incredible old-fashioned candies.
Listen,
I mean,
I am way
on.
Ahead of you. I'll be buying the Wayne Bunn candy bar in bulk. Bulk, I tell you.
Okay, well, now I have to ask you what you're doing for New Year's Eve.
Not much. You know, we just probably like to sit around and watch Anderson Cooper get drunk on television. That's about, I mean, I used to get drunk on, and why would I just go, now sit home and watch somebody else do it?
I get you. Well, yeah. I think we're going to go to a friend's, just a casual little get-together.
Oh, nice.
Luck. And then I'm hoping to come home, you know, I probably won't be out past midnight. I'll be back here and then we'll watch the ball drop or
yeah.
something.
Have you ever done, you must have at some point, the big New York thing, ball drop back in the day. Did you?
No, never. I hate crowds like that. No, I don't like concerts unless I'm in like an enclosed space. I mean,
really?
I really don't like being in big things like that.
How about when you were at the mansion? Was there any New Year's Eve there?
Oh, listen, this is one reason why I don't care to go to any more New Year's Eve parties. When you've been to Hugh Hefner's New Year's Eve parties, there is nothing else that compares on the planet.
I suppose.
On the planet. The last one that I remember, 3-6 Mafia performed. They had his girlfriend at the time, Bridget Marquardt. They rolled out this big, huge pink cake, massive cake. She popped out of the middle of the cake and proceeded to do a slow striptease in front of, on top of the cake, in front of Hefner's table, peeling her gloves off with her teeth. I mean, the whole nine yards, the place you could have heard a pin drop. I mean, and every celebrity under the sun was there. I mean, they had Jimmy Connors was there. Penelope Cruz, James Caan, Nicolas Cage, astronaut Buzz Aldrin. Tiffany and Donald Trump were there.
Really?
Uh-huh. Julie Newmar, Quentin Tarantino.
Julie Newmar?
Pamela Anderson, Jack Nicholson, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Eddie Murphy, Warren Beatty, Paris and Nikki Hilton, Eddie Murphy. These are all the people that went to those parties. And these
wow.
were, I mean, it was just, it's like nothing you've ever seen before. And then he had these massive, massive trays of, you know, lobster and oysters and, I mean, every kind of food that you can imagine, any kind of drink you want to have. I mean, the butler service was crazy. It was surreal. Surreal.
Every male in America, including my dad, would have loved to be there.
Oh, my God. And Village People performed one year. That's when the crowd went crazy. I mean, it's just nuts. I mean, he was a doll. He was a doll. And the most amazing host, obviously, as you can tell. So,
and he was always in his pajamas, I suppose.
Well, he had different levels of pajamas. You know, there was one that had like a velvet smoking jacket.
Yeah.
With the, you know, dark burgundy with black satin lapels. And he would wear it with a white dress shirt and a bow tie and black slacks. And so he dressed up when the occasion called for it. And other times, you know, he was in his, you know, different signature pajama sets, which, you know, still looked cool. So, yeah, no, those days, I mean, if I can't go to Hefner's parties, I don't care to go to anybody's party.
Then it's a potluck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I love these friends, so I'm not complaining.
That'll be a lot of fun for y'all. You know, I don't know. You know, sometimes I feel so out of the mainstream of stuff. You know, when you ask me about their New Year's resolution and stuff, I hate to be like a stick in the mud, but it's like, you know, I just don't see things that way. And even the New Year's Eve, I mean, it's great if that's what you need to start your year over. But then if that's the case, why are you starting again next year? Let's just do it every day. You know, find something every day to get your ass going.
I want you to put that in writing, John, so I can.
I will. I will.
So just sit down and write it before you get too busy.
I will. And, you know, I have a surprise for you that you don't know about. I didn't even tell you on purpose.
What?
So since this is the final, Oh, good.
Yes.
So since this is the final show for us this year, and thanks so much for people listening. You know, we launched, what was it, April, March, April, somewhere in there.
Thank you all so much. We're so grateful.
Oh, boy. My God. And the response that I watch people when they listen to the show and they post on your page and stuff like that, and they don't even realize how much work goes in behind the scenes, how much you do and how much to put all this together. And our off-air conversations and the text messages that go back and the emails and the audio. So I haven't done much of this for this show because there isn't actually a whole lot, but I have a little blooper reel.
Shut up! I love blooper reels.
Well, this one is just, So this one has some beeps in all the right spots just to keep things clean. And it's about 5.5 minutes, so I'm just going to drop the needle on this. And this is a little slice of behind the scenes at Candid Candace, the podcast.
All right. So now, you know, as always, like for last time, I'm going to close with a quote.
Hang on a second.
Are you ready?
Hang on. Yeah. So we got to split this in two parts. Okay. So this is from that story, I want you to introduce Kathy St. George.
Oh, well, I did already.
Well,
and
now we're going to go to my conversation with Kathy St. George.
Oh, okay.
And then put that in, and then we'll just take a 3-second pause, and then we're going to come back on the other side. I got two questions for you about everything you two talked about.
Okay.
Then you can close it, okay?
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
All right, so go ahead.
Okay. So what am I going to say?
Hello. Hello, everybody.
There's so much direction there.
I know. Covered all that. Everything was important. You can find more at my blog. And here's my conversation with my friend Kathy.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
Just So for more information, you can catch my stuff at the blog. And here's my conversation with Kathy St. George.
Okay. All right.
Oh, my God. That's a new one.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, John, for again being with me on this great podcast. I hope everybody enjoys it. I hope they have a fabulous weekend, and I hope they tune in next time. Thank you.
How about a better close than that?
I know. That sucked.
That
didn't
sucked.
It?
Wazoo.
I'm so glad you called me on that.
It's Friday. What the
fuck? I was sitting here thinking, well, I don't want to say Friday because.
Well, I know. That's okay. But, you know, I mean, just a little stronger close than that. Thank you. Like we handed you the toilet paper or something. Come on.
You're so right. Oh, my God, John. I'm so sorry. All right, let's do it
again. Go for it.
All right. Fun.
Say again?
And that was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I don't want you to get gigged by Facebook again. So let's try.
What am I going to do?
Well, so when you post this time, so I've never had a problem. I've been doing this 5 years, never had one problem. So what I'm going to do is I want you to send me this show description. It shouldn't be very long.
Yeah.
And instead of taking the link and posting it so it posts everything on your page. Uh-huh. What I'm going to ask you to do is to, once you've written it, send it to me, I'll post the show. You go cut and copy and paste what's on the Podbean page, the show description. Put that on your webpage, you know, on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Just cut and copy it. And then let's come up with a generic picture. Whatever you're going to send me, I don't want you to copy it from the website in its entirety. You know, whatever, it's a Christmas tree, whatever picture you want to put with this show. And then do the same thing, cut and copy and paste that to the page, then post it with the link in it. You'll have the description, you'll put the picture in, and then you put the link in, all copied from the podcast page. Instead of just sending, I send you the link, you just post it. Let's try it in reverse. If you have any problems, just let me know. I could post on your page, but then it looks like me posting, and it should be you.
I know. So I send you the description, then I go to Podbean, and I copy everything on there, and then I paste it into my post.
Yeah, so first thing is you send me the description, let me put the show up. Then once I send you the link to the page, just cut and paste the description, put it in your Facebook page, you know, posting. Mm-hmm. Then put the picture in second, whatever picture it is. And then the third thing is you'll just cut and paste and copy the link, the email, the URL.
Okay.
For the page.
I hope they don't ruin, you know, because they threatened that if I did it again, they were going to take my page
down.
See,
it's just unbelievable.
What the f*** is that?
I don't know.
And I have sent a million messages. I said, listen, apparently you're not investigating this enough. I said, we talk about nonprofit. This is a community service. I said, not only is it against no community standards,
right,
but it's helpful.
Right.
I said, this is just ridiculous. You've got to have somebody. Of course, nobody's going to look at it.
Yeah, no response.
No, but I've certainly done my best to make them see the light. And it's just, it's so preposterous that would be something that they think is offensive.
So here's the opposite, right? So once I took the exact same content, I just loaded it differently, and it shows up for some reason differently on your page, and it's still there. Huh. So that's what we want to do. We want to have you take the content, you know, the text, put it up, then put the picture up, you know, in the drop, you just put where you would put a photo in there, and then you just copy the URL and stick it in the middle and hit post, and let's see what happens.
Okay.
And I'll send you an email with the steps again.
Oh, good. That'd be great. Okay. All right, honey. Thanks.
All right. So send it over. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, John. Have a nice weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Tom. Well,
all right, we'll just wrap it up. Hang on. We can say goodbye now for real. I'll just cut this out.
Yeah.
So thanks, Tommy.
You're welcome. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Tell your hubby I said hi.
You bet I will. He adores you just like I do.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Somebody, who was I talking to that knows him? It was a good guy he was.
Yeah, the best. You know, we got engaged in Gibson, so I have it has a special place in my heart there, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'll tell you a real funny story. You know Kathy at Gibson's. I love
of
Kathy.
Of course, Kathy, yes. Kathy O'Malley-Pacone. Yeah,
she was a real young girl, like a teeny bopper. Frank wasn't married to Barbara Sinatra yet. And when he came to Chicago, he got her to come to Chicago, and he proposed to her at the Ambassador East, and he put a ring on her finger about the size of a walnut, you know. And anyhow, so Kathy's job was to, when Barbara was in town, to go with her shopping, to, you know, to, like a lady in waiting or something.
Yeah.
Take her places. And Kathy was a young girl. And when Barbara showed her that huge diamond ring, she said, Kathy, can you remind Kathy of this? Kathy gets a kick out. Kathy said, wow, you got to be careful when you wash dishes when you set that down. And Barbara said, I don't wash dishes.
That's hysterical. Oh, I love it. Oh,
now,
my gosh.
We're off the air, right?
Yep.
We should have been recording
But I'm not putting that on the air.
I don't care if you put that
on the air.
I want to put it on. I think that's cute.
I'm now going to tell you a story that you can't put on the air, okay?
Okay.
That's a little bit behind the scenes of the Candace Jordan podcast.
Those are incredible clips. Boy, you're a sneak recorder, John.
Listen, I have so much audio. I have stuff. I got the goods in everybody's sister. But, you know, it's interesting to me, especially when I do audio book work with people and produce those.
Yeah.
You know, talking for long periods of time, like, you know, it's not normal for humans to talk into a microphone.
Yeah.
But when, you know how it is, you're doing so much and there's just so much you can't use. So whether that's a little bit there with Tommy Dreesen after the show or our conversation, to me, it's like, who's on first? How many times do I got to explain how we're to do this? And we go back and forth and back and forth, you know, and it was just, it's just a lot of fun to do this show. And so some of the stuff makes me laugh.
Oh, it makes me laugh. And you're such a patient person, John, I'm telling you. I mean, I don't get a lot of the things that you try to tell me to do, but
I know. You do really well.
And I do wish we could share what Tom Dreesen told us, because that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, we can't.
No, we can't. And we never will. So people will just have to...
Our lips are sealed like the Go-Go's.
Lips are sealed. I love him. I love Tom Dreesen. And Kathy is a riot. She has got the greatest sense of humor. I can see her saying that to Barbara Sinatra.
You know, you think about the guests that have been on the show since, you know, you have this golden Rolodex, the people you've reached out to. And it's just astonishing to me because, you know, Tommy told me this after the show, like the next day after we had done this and we talked off the air. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, everybody rallies behind Candace because of her authenticity and her heart. And that's like the string that runs through all the people that are on as guests and the people, you know, that come to the show and work. We're going to have some sponsors coming up next year. And this is why I'm here. I know we believe in what you do. And I said to you many times, if you were not highlighting these good and great things happening in the city, nobody would hear about them.
Oh, John, thank you so much. Well, I'm so thrilled to be able to do it with you, especially. And I think this is a fun show. And I think from the response we've received that there's a lot of other people that feel the same. So
I agree.
That's my, I am very grateful, obviously, for that. And I'm looking forward to pumping us up more next year and bringing in some advertisers and sponsors and growing our crowd.
And I got an idea. Can you imagine the Candace Jordan podcast live with a studio audience?
Oh, well, that's a... I'd really like not having to have makeup on and no high heels.
I know. You're shuffling around the house. I get it. And doing your best Green Acres impersonation. But maybe you never know.
Well, you never know. Gosh, that's for sure. I never say no. So, you know, I walk through every door that opens. And so we'll see what happens.
And I got to give you a lot of credit. Listen, this is not something you're used to doing. You're, by trade, a writer. And I remember we first started talking about it a year ago, before we even started, I said, CJ, right. This is something that's, you would just gravitate to. And everybody said the same thing. I mean, I think we kind of got you out of the habit of having 17 pages of notes.
Well, if you saw my desk really? Area right now, it's down to like 9.
Oh, well, that's very good.
Yeah. So I'm diminishing my workload here, and I'm trying to wing it like you say I should do. Your advice is golden to me. Obviously you're the pro, but, you know, I have to be a little more, I have to be a little more planned. I have more planning to be able to
I get you.
Because I
get
don't. There's so many things that I have that I don't want to miss or forget. And
sure,
you know, so I have to do a little more research than I think you do. Yeah. I think this all comes extremely naturally to you, and you're superb at it, obviously.
Well, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing it with the people like you who make the world a better place. At this point in my life, it's kind of all I give a shit about.
Oh, I.
I mean, I really don't. But the rest of the stuff, I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, a little birthday friend. Well, listen, I'll be thinking of you floating around in that 98 degree tank. You don't think that's too hot, 98 degrees?
No, Mom, it's okay.
A hot.
No, it's okay. You put a little ramen soup in there.
Yourself
yeah,
in there.
A little ramen in there, you're good.
Okay. Well, listen, everyone, thank you so much. This is our New Year's Eve show. We hope you have a safe and happy and healthy New Year's Eve. We hope that all your resolutions and goals for the new year come true. And I just hope you continue to listen to Candid Candace, the podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Candid Candace podcast. For more of what's going on in Chicago, go to CandidCandace.com.